Why did the ants dance on the jam jar?
I don't know. Why?
The lid said twist to open.
it's time for the children's hour.
Arkadaşım means my friend in Turkish, coming off of a CD called World Music Party by Putumayo Collections that was released many years ago. You're listening to the Children's Hour. We have a lot of great kids in the studio here, starting over here.
Hi, I'm Lucas.
Hi, I'm Soren.
Hello, it's Haley.
Hi, it's Maya.
Hi, it's Julia.
Well, we have a very special show for you today. We're going all over the world through song and rhythms and beats and instruments. And to get there, we're going to a world music festival here in Albuquerque, New Mexico, Globalkerque. And we went to the school day performance of Globalkerque, where more than 1,000 students had gathered to hear a concert with the Yupik band Bamua and a band from Belize called the Garifuna Collective. Plus, we're going to hear music from CDs from places all over the planet. Also coming up on the show, we're going to be talking with the renowned award-winning author of so many books, including the books in the Percy Jackson series, Rick Riordan. This is a World Music Special on the Children's Hour. From Trinidad y Tobago, that was Agnes Akuakuro from a CD and book release called Songs in the Shade of the Cashew and Coconut Trees, Lullabies and Nursery Rhymes from West Africa and the Caribbean. It just came out from The Secret Mountain. You can learn more at thesecretmountain.com. Let's stick around in the Caribbean. This is one of the most influential Caribbean musicians of all time, Bob Marley. And he recorded this song when he was just 17 years old. Listening to the Children's Hour, our World Music Special. Just off the west coast of Africa, you'll find a series of islands called Cape Verde or Cabo Verde. And here you'll also find a unique style of musical rhythms like morna and coladera. The musician Lucy Bella has made it her life mission to bring the music of Cape Verde to an international audience. This is the title track of her latest release, Laco Umbilical, umbilical cord, singing of her divine connection to the land of her birth.
Podes chum tem bico de mel, mãe parida que dá, mãe terra tá guardada pra eternidade. É o mais forte que tem, é laço umbilical. Tem nó de Deus pra eternidade. Ca corta minha raiz, ca tiranha chum, ca deixa secar minha seiva, minha vida. Minha terra concreteu, ca corta minha raiz, ca tiranha chum, ca deixa secar minha seiva, minha vida, minha terra concreteu. Flampa mot pa mot. O cremegão minha direi, flampa mot pa mot, o cremegão minha direi. Podes chon tem bico de meu. Mãe parida que dá, mãe terra tá guardada pra eternidade. É o mais forte que tem, é laço umbilical que tem nó de Deus pra eternidade. Tiranha chum, cadixa seca, minha seiva, minha vida, minha terra concreteu. Ca corta minha raiz, catiranha chum, cadixa seca, minha seiva, minha vida. Minha terra concreteu. Flam pa mot, pa mot, mbo cremegan, minha direi. Flam pa mot, pa mot, mbo cremegan, minha direi.
Sometimes world music is very different from what we hear in the United States. And that is certainly true in China. The Yangdong Grand Singers is a choir, and they're made up of farmers of the Dong ethnic group from the Yangdong Township in southwestern China's Guizhou province. This group specializes in the grand song of the Dong people, and they have performed all over the world. Take a listen to one style of music that doesn't involve any instruments at all, except for the human voice. This is the Yangdong Grand Singers. In the background from a CD called Songs from Mongolia, Tuva, Russia, and that region, that is the Deer Dance song. You're hearing a Jew's harp, a unique instrument that's played in the mouth, and you're hearing vocal overtone singing, a style of music unique to Mongolia and Tuva and that area of Asia. You're listening to the Children's Hour. We're doing a world music special today. The Children's Hour is produced by the Children's Hour Incorporated, a New Mexico nonprofit dedicated to producing high-quality kids' public radio. Support provided by listeners just like you. Learn more at childrenshour.org. Follow us on social media. We're at TCH Radio.
You're listening to the Children's Hour, kids' public radio. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Children's Hour. Today we're talking about world music. And in Albuquerque, every fall, we have a festival called Globalkerque. And every Globalkerque, there's a day when kids come from schools to hear some of the bands perform, to get a taste of what world music sounds like. We had a chance to be at Globalkerque's school time show this year, and record a little of it for you. You're going to hear two different bands from Global Kirky performing live in front of an audience of about 1,600 children. Before the show started, I had a chance to talk to some preschoolers about what they think they might be hearing.
Have you ever heard world music before?
No.
Yes.
What do you think you might hear?
Music.
Drums.
Six. Pianos.
Cars?
Yeah. Trumpets.
Nickel.
Drums.
The band Bumua are from Alaska. The word Bumua is a Yupik Inuit word that means encore or do it again. And Bumua showcases Inuit culture through music and dance. And they did that for the kids at Global Kirky. Take a listen.
Oh, we find that.
My name is Philip Blanchette, and I'm with the band Bumyuwa, and I'm from Anchorage, Alaska.
Many of these kids may know you because you created the Molly of Denali theme song. Part of your mission is bigger than just the mission of playing music, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, coming from the North and from the Arctic, we really value relationships and connection. And with our music, it's connection with the environment and the animals. But with, you know, with us as people, it's a connection to each other. And so we love coming down to down Lower 48 and down to the where it's warm and connecting with cultures and people from all over and seeing that, you know, the roots of that reflection within us. And we love to share our songs and our stories from Alaska because they're fun and they're fun to share. And they do have some meaning, deep meaning. And a deep connection to our ancestors. And so that's always an honor.
Here we go. Chinatown, yeah, Bali Kaka. Molly Kaka, I'm a Moronto Lord. If I don't mind for money, I'm a giant cow. Molly Kaka, giant cow. Molly Kaka, I'm a Moronto Lord. Moronto Lord, if I don't mind for money, Kakumi kukim na tai kuni oh told me you vibe about my knee yeah. Oh you got a tongue to giant cow Molly Kaka
Bumyuwa on the Children's Hour. We went to Global Kirky and got to hear from a couple of bands who gave us a real taste of what live world music sounds like. The next band to play for the kids was the Garifuna Collective from Belize. This band plays a unique type of music
coming from their Afro-Amerindian cultural heritages. And they play some of the most interesting instruments that we saw. They play turtle shells and jawbones, along with guitars and bass. It's hypnotic to listen to them, and the kids were dancing all over the place. Maybe you will, too. This is the Children's Hour.
This is the last song. So we're gonna party for this last song, right? Alrighty then.
Oh,
Garifuna Collective, recorded at Global Kirky's Schooltime Kids Show. You can learn a lot more about Global Kirky by going to globalkirky.org. And we should note, Global Kirky is a sponsor of KUNM.
You're listening to the Children's Hour, Kids Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Children's Hour. We are talking with one of our all-time favorite authors, Rick Riordan. Rick Riordan is an author of many, many books for young people, including the Percy Jackson series. And that Percy Jackson and the Olympians series has been translated into 42 languages and sold more than 30 million copies in the United States. His first full-length novel was Big Red Tequila, but then The big breakthrough book was The Lightning Thief, which was written in 2005, and it was the first novel in the five-volume Percy Jackson series, and it puts a bunch of teenagers in a Greek-Roman mythological setting. Rick Riordan, thank you for being with us on the Children's Hour. We're pretty excited to be talking with you.
Yay, I'm excited to be here.
For me, I remember reading the Kane Chronicles as my first book series, and it's really great to be able to meet you and just to be able to have an interview that's sincere and real.
Awesome. I'm really glad.
Lots more questions in the studio from fans of yours. Yeah, Julia.
So you write so many amazing books. How do you avoid like writer's block and keep the inspiration going?
Yeah, great question, Julia. Writer's block, I mean, it's not something that I think about a lot. I think one thing that really helps with that is having a deadline, knowing that the publisher's waiting for it and it has to be done. You know, that's really motivating. But the other thing I found that helps, there's a couple of things for writers that I recommend. One is outline. Even if it's not like really a formal outline, even if it's just like a couple of pages of notes, kind of do a couple of lines where you think the book is going and what's going to happen in every chapter. And that at least gives you an idea of where you're going to end up. And the other really important thing is, for me anyway, I have to write the first draft nonstop. Once I've gotten a really quick outline, I sit down and I write the whole thing from beginning to end. It usually takes about 3 months. I don't let myself go back. I don't let myself edit. I know that it's going to be terrible. It's a first draft. It's awful. That's okay. You know, let it be awful. Just finish it. And then I can go back and revise all I want.
Do you plan on making any more Percy Jackson novels or movies?
Well, novels, I don't know right now what'll be the next thing up. I'm finishing up the series called The Trials of Apollo, which is sort of that's the third kind of series that looks at Percy Jackson's world. It's not from Percy's point of view, but it's with a lot of the same characters. I try to mix it up because it makes it more interesting for me. So the Heroes of Olympus was third person and was from all these different points of view. And then in the Trials of Apollo, I said, okay, how can I go back into the world and do it a little bit differently? So I did it first person from the point of view of a god. Would I go back and do a Percy Jackson book again? I don't know. I'm not sure. In terms of movies, I have no idea. Those rights are something you kind of sell them once, and that's all you can do. I mean, it's done. So they were sold to Fox way back, even before The Lightning Thief was published, like back in 2002. Those rights were sold, and they stay sold forever. Fox is now part of Disney. Disney is my publisher. That doesn't necessarily mean the Disney movies would do something with it. Maybe they would. I just don't know.
Do you plan on writing a book from the monster's point of view?
Ooh, that's a great question. I don't know. It's a fantastic idea. I would sort of have to think about that and see what monster might be the one I'd want to follow. Yeah, great idea.
Where did you get the idea of Magnus Chase?
Magnus Chase. I'd been wanting to do something on Norse mythology for a long time. I really love the stories of Loki and Thor and Odin. And then it occurred to me that Norse mythology has Valhalla, where if you die bravely, you get resurrected as one of Odin's eternal warriors. And I thought, well, I mean, some of the Vikings back in the old days wouldn't have been much older than teenagers. They would have been 12, 13, 14. What would happen if a modern day kid died heroically, but then found himself reborn as one of the Einherji, the warriors of Odin? So I just kind of ran with that idea, and that's where Magnus came from.
I've heard that you were a teacher before you became like an author. Is that true?
Yeah, I was a teacher before I became an author. I taught mostly middle school. I taught sixth grade a lot and did that for like 15 years. So I taught some in Texas and some in California. I taught at a lot of different kinds of schools. And when I was writing The Lightning Thief, I actually relied on my middle school students to be my beta testers. I showed them the manuscript first, and I was really nervous. But they had some great comments and great ideas.
What was your inspiration for Alex in the Magnus Chase series?
Yeah, Alex Fierro is one of my favorite characters. I really love Alex. Alex is gender fluid and is a shape changer and is inspired in a lot of ways by some former students that I had. I think that's true of a lot of my characters, is that I think about kids I've taught over the years, and especially kids that had a real hard time finding books that had characters that were like them. And Alex is one of those examples. You don't read about characters that are transgender or gender fluid very much in popular fiction. And I taught several kids that you know, were sort of trying to go through that process and discover who they were. And I thought about them as I was writing Alex and said, you know, it's kind of important to be able to see yourself in a book. And Alex was what came out of that.
Do you ever plan on writing a book about yourself, such as like Rick Riordan, Son of Zeus?
A book about me, honestly, would be so boring. No one would want to read it.
No one in this room believes that a book about you would be boring.
I don't have heroic adventures, really. I mean, if it were me, you know, in Percy's world, I'd be hiding behind a bush somewhere, you know, letting the heroes take care of it.
I think we all would. It's kind of frightening sometimes.
What inspired you to write the Percy Jackson series?
It was my son, really. When he was about, gosh, I don't know, 7 or 8 years old, he was having trouble in school because he is ADHD. He has attention deficit and he is dyslexic. And school was really tough in elementary school. He was so scared of doing his homework and hated it so much, he would hide under the dining room table. And we would have to sort of coax him out and try to help him feel better about his work. So when he found out that he had these learning differences, I started telling him stories at bedtime. He did like Greek mythology. That was like the only thing that year in school that really spoke to him. So I had taught Greek mythology for years. And so I started telling him stories and eventually made up one about this kid, Percy Jackson, who, like him, was ADHD and dyslexic and discovers that those are signs that you might be a demigod. And, you know, suddenly my son was like, yeah, that made total sense to him. So it was really just about making him feel empowered, you know, making him feel seen.
What gave you the idea of writing about somebody who is like homeless, like Magnus Chase, or doesn't have that good of a life, but then finds out that they're a demigod?
Yeah, you know, it really is, again, it's sort of the same as about Percy being kind of a character that speaks to kids that have learning differences, or Alex being a character that speaks to kids that are, you know, thinking about gender. I don't think a lot of people may realize how many kids you go to school with don't have a home. I mean, I've taught a lot of kids that were living out of their cars or living in shelters, or they were just sort of couch surfing from friends to friend's house. And you wouldn't necessarily know that just by having them in class with you. But the stuff that they're struggling with at home is huge. It's tremendous. And there's so many kids that experience that, and that I've known personally and taught, that Magnus was kind of a representation for them. It's just sort of my way of saying, I know, you know, I know that this is really tough and you're not having a good life right now, but that doesn't make you any less of a hero. It doesn't make you any less of a person, you know, that can be in a book like Magnus Chase.
What specifically from your childhood made you want to be an author?
Oh, wow. Well, not being good at anything else maybe had something to do with it. No, I mean, I was a nerdy kid. You know, I was not popular. I wasn't a sports jock. You know, I didn't have any of those things going for me. Really, I had reading comic books or, you know, reading fantasy books. And we didn't even have the internet back then. So, I mean, I couldn't even connect to other kids that were like me, you know, unless they like lived in the neighborhood There was no way to reach out and find people that had interests like mine. So I wrote, and that's kind of what I saw myself wanting to be. I'm just lucky that, you know, it got me through that really rough time in middle school and it turned out okay.
Can you tell us about your latest book, The Trials of Apollo?
The Trials of Apollo, yeah, that's the series. And there are going to be 5 books. The Tyrant's Tomb is the latest. Basically, it's about Apollo, who has been sentenced to Earth. He's basically been grounded by his dad, Zeus. He's been turned into a 16-year-old kid with no powers. And he has to kind of find out what he did wrong and how can he get back into his dad's good side and become a god again. So the newest book is The Tyrant's Tomb. It's number 4 out of number 5. And the fun thing about this one is it takes us back to Camp Jupiter, the Roman demigod camp. So the whole thing happens there in the Bay Area. You're going to see a lot of the characters from previous books, Tyson the Cyclops, Ella the Harpy, Frank Zhang, Hazel Levesque, Reina Avila Ramirez Arellano, and a lot of the others from the demigod side on the Romans.
Rick Riordan, thank you so much for being with us on the Children's Hour today. We really love having you.
Oh, thank you, guys. It was great talking to you.
Next up, coming off a brand new release, Timbalulu, Finding Friends Far From Home. This is Orin Etkin on the Children's Hour.
Timbalala.
Hey, Ron.
Hey, Rachel.
I've got a riddle that's so hard, I bet you can't answer it.
Let's hear it.
What is taller than the tallest house? And what is faster than the fastest mouse? What can burn for years and for years? What can cry without any tears?
Tumbala, tumbala, tumbala laika. Tumbala, tumbala, tumbala laika. Tumbala laika, spielbala laika. Tumbala laika, play like some time.
Taller than the tallest house. I know. A chimney is taller than the tallest house, and a cat is faster than the fastest mouse, and love can burn for years and for years, and a clarinet can cry without any tears. Listen to that clarinet cry.
Tumbala, 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 tumbala.
Children's Hour is written and produced by Katie Stone.
We had engineering support today from Andres Martinez here at the Sunspot Studio and Jerry DeTata at KUNM.
Post-production engineering provided by Marty Adam Smith.
Vanessa Vassar and Gary Newell take our photos.
Our teen team runs our social media. Follow us at TCH Radio on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.
If you have an idea for a show topic or just want to reach out to us, find our contact form at childrenshour.org.
We'll be back next week with another edition of
The Children's Hour.
We're going to go out with a tune by Nordic Daughter, a duo out of Denver, Colorado, with an eclectic international flair. This is their track, We Are One.
We are one. We are human. We are part of
Children's Hour is a production of the Children's Hour Incorporated, a New Mexico nonprofit dedicated to producing high-quality kids' public radio. Support provided by the Friends of the Children's Hour. More at childrenshour.org. There you can find our social media feeds, pictures from our shows, podcasts, and our contact form. Let us know what you think of the show. Meow Wolf is a proud supporter of the Children's Hour. Meow Wolf creates immersive experiences that transport audiences of all ages into kaleidoscopic realms of story and exploration. MeowWolf.com. Our theme music was written by C.K. Barlow. Got a great idea for a show? You can email us at info@childrenshour.org. We'll be back next week with another edition of
The Children's Hour!
Kids Public Radio!